there might have been a push to turn my show into a one-hour show, but no, that's just the curse of a producer who has two shows and the repetitiveness of throwing in an open.
They're right next to each other.
Yeah, so that's Sean Mapes threw in the Gallant George Open. They still don't begin till noon, but hey, now you if you have never heard their open before, now you know what it sounds like.
Yeah, whoops.
Gallant George coming up at 12. It's fine. I've certainly done that before. I don't think I've ever put my own show open in for the John Lance show, but I've screwed up opens before.
I'm sure they'd love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure it wouldn't become a 10-minute conversation about how I don't respect them, which is clear, but it wouldn't have anything to do with me putting in the wrong open. So we move on to a topic near and dear to Sean Mapes' heart. Maybe some of you guys too, depending on where your allegiances lie. The Red River Shootout is this Saturday at noon in Dallas. Good old Cotton Bowl. Number one Texas versus a ranked OU team. And there's this big hypothetical article in CBS Sports about who should start, Quinn or Arch. One guy thinks Arch brings more to the table because of his legs. Another guy talks about Quinn's solid play in big games, and he's stable, and you won't have to worry about him having any freshman moments like you might with Arch in a big game. It's a purely hypothetical. Two guys conjured it up for content when we all know who's going to start this game as long as they're healthy. Quinn Ewers is starting this game. Sean, should he start this game?
Yeah, if he's healthy, he should start.
Simple enough, right?
Yeah.
Should be no real questions about this. Arch?
I mean, if you want to even go with if you think they're even, which it doesn't really look like they're even as far as quarterbacks go. Yeah, I mean, watch Tennessee versus Arkansas from Saturday. That's what it looks like when a redshirt freshman has to play. You get that game, you know, I don't know, once every four games where it's just not working for it's the growing pains of a young quarterback with the two games that the Longhorns have coming up. There's no reason to do that with the three games they have coming up. Oklahoma, Georgia, and then Vanderbilt. At Vanderbilt.
I would agree. And all of a sudden, at Vanderbilt is a tough one. All of a sudden. It is. They've played well this year. There is no question. Sarkisian has made it known. And you know, you try to turn this into a conversation because you watch Arch play and you think of all the potential.
Also, if you put Arch's name in a headline, people click on it.
Of course. And the fact, to be clear, if his beyond the Manning name and what it does for content for people, watching Arch play, you know, if his name wasn't Arch, people would go, okay, nice job, young fella.
Arch Williams.
Yeah, if his name wasn't Manning, I guess, not Arch. Arch is a cool name, but if his name wasn't Manning, thanks. Appreciate it, young fella. The guy who led us to the playoff is back. We're going to play him. There won't be these questions about whether he should play or not.
The guy with wins at Alabama and at Michigan.
Yeah, he should. Yeah,
we're actually going to go with that.
We wouldn't have we wouldn't have people who are in the content game, whether they work for CBS Sports or a different publication, pushing for the backup quarterback when the tested veteran who has played well in big games is available. They understand.
Yeah,
and that's how the Texas program is operating too.
It's a little different doing it. And just doing it for 2 years as opposed to two and a half games against UTSA, UL Monroe, and Mississippi State.
Yeah, a bit different.
It's a jump. Because even the Mississippi State game, like, it was close in the first half.
All home games, by the way.
All home games, and it was close in the first half. Not really because of Arch. Arch was pretty good that game. It was it was a sleepy game by everyone else in that. But you can't do it in the Red River rivalry game. You just can't do it.
You cannot. So it leads me to this. I think I kind of brought it up before we went to break. Level of concern. You've watched Oklahoma play all year. And excluding, as I said, their dumb Sooner Magic thing, yeah. Is there any real concern about this game from a Texas perspective for you and the people you talk to about this game?
Oklahoma is not that good. They're like pretty good. They're a type of team that always gets underrated because they suck on offense, but they actually have a good defense. And if you just suck on offense, people are quicker to throw you in the trash. And they actually do have a good defense. Their offense, not good at all. The quarterback change, I'm not really sure how much it matters or like the effect of it is. I don't know if they're going to be that much better with Hawkins instead of Jackson Arnold in there, more of a running threat. But it's not even Sooner magic that makes you not comfortable with this game. It is just the Red River shootout-ness of this game where Texas has won this game at least once, going 5-7, and Oklahoma going to going to the playoff. Like, that just happens in this game. I think it's something crazy, like 9 of the last 10 or 9 of the last 11 of these are one-score games. It's just, it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be a chill watch, except for that one time where it was a very chill watch. But it normally, there's going to be some tightness, some stupid plays, some turnovers that bounce off of three different people that make it at least a stressful watch for the first three quarters. Because I have a lot of experience of watching an overmatched team playing this game. Normally it's my team playing against Oklahoma.
True.
And even then, it's normally pretty close. And the entire time you're like, how is this happening?
I wonder if this will follow the same game script of Tennessee versus Oklahoma, where Tennessee at some point came to the realization that this team can't score enough on us to make us...
Where it's not a blowout, but at no point do you feel in danger.
Yeah, as long as we don't screw this up, they're not going to win this game. So let's kind of pack it in and not make any mistakes.
That's kind of where I land on it, where I don't think this is going to be like 49-0 again. Like that had a lot of factors going into it. They legitimately just did not have a playable quarterback that game. And I think Hawkins is a playable quarterback.
But we talk about, now he did go play it at Auburn. I wouldn't say he won the game for him. The pick six helped them win that. So
yeah.
So he's played.
They scored like 13 points on offense.
Yeah, so he played in the back half of the game against Tennessee. He's played at Auburn, but this is going to be something unlike he's ever experienced, starting in this game against maybe the best team in the country. This is more, I think, a more survival game for Hawkins than it is him thriving. And I wouldn't be surprised at some point if Jackson Arnold makes an appearance just because of how the game might go.
Yeah, and it could be a little bit of A&M Wegman Reed stuff where it's like, Texas probably prepped for Arnold, but maybe there's something to gain by throwing him out there. Maybe throwing both of them out there. Like, you can really get weird with it. And that's really what I want to stress to people, is the option of this just being weird is very high. Like, the chances that this is just, like, a stupid game is very high.
If you're looking for stupid, tune in at 11 a.m. on Fox.
It'll be like, well-played. It'll be interesting. It's on ABC.
Oh, it's on ABC this
year? At 2:30, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And, SEC, I forgot. Yeah.
Yes. And, yeah, it's going to be wild. I feel pretty good about Texas winning. I feel like a 9 out of 10 confidence on the Red River shootout scale, which is like really a 7.
Got it. It should go Texas's way. Just history suggests it could go anyway.
And I just know for an hour and a half I'm going to want to kill myself. Like, I just know that that's what happens.
It's going to be miserable.
It's just not going to be fun.
Yeah, because stupid things are happening that make no sense when you try to analyze the game. And all of a sudden Oklahoma's in this game because of dumb stuff.
Literally, I think only 2022 is the only, like, fun, stress-free Red River game I can remember watching.
And as you pointed out, it's because they didn't have a quarterback who could play. Dylan Gabriel couldn't play, and all their other ones weren't good either. So we'll see how that plays out. Oklahoma, Texas, I'm not even just leaning Texas. I just expect Texas to win. But I don't think blow it. I think it'll be something like where, I said, they become very aware that the only way they're losing this game is if they screw it up. So they figure out a way not to screw it up. And they beat Oklahoma.
They're 15-point favorites. I would not. I would take the points.
I think maybe we're talking like a 10-point win or something, yeah. Something like that. If it goes a different way where Texas does blow them out, credit to them because it'd be fighting against everything that history suggests would be the result in this game.
Yeah, you need a couple turnovers. I mean, I think for Texas to blow out Oklahoma, you're going to need a couple turnovers from the Sooners offense.
And it's possible, that young offense.
Yeah, and for the Sooners to win, you probably are going to need turnovers from the Texas offense for them to win.
To win the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have, I would probably call it a CFP eliminator game between Ole Miss and LSU.
Yeah.
Two teams that you would say are...
Get them out of my face. Get the loser out of my face.
The second to third tier of the SEC right now, if you put Texas... If maybe you put Texas by themselves at the top tier, Georgia, Alabama as your two, throw Tennessee up there as well, and then you have LSU, Ole Miss, and A&M as your third tier possibly. So maybe this is a third tier game.
Still, Mizzou, only one loss?
Only because... They're only... We've seen how Mizzou has
played.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not comfortable putting them in the same tier as A&M.
No. Yeah. Imagine that after what happened on Saturday.
It's not comfortable.
Yeah, probably wouldn't be a great idea. We have LSU Ole Miss. That's a game where, sure, I'm glad Jackson Dart's okay after getting fake shot on the field, so I'm glad he's going to be able to play. I'm glad to see that. I don't know where I stand on this game. I feel like the last time I saw Ole Miss against anyone competent, and that means I'm talking about Kentucky, that offense looked very stifled. I don't buy an Ole Miss. I'll say that. I don't buy it.
Yeah.
I look at them and I watch them play, and you put up big numbers against some bad football teams early, and you were already ranked really high, and people evaluated you in a certain way. But when I saw you against not even top-tier SEC athletes,
yeah,
but mid-tier SEC athletes who were coached by a good coach, I saw what they did to your offense.
So in their four non-conference games, they Ole Miss scored 76 against Furman. They scored 52 against Middle Tennessee, 40 against Wake, 52 against Georgia Southern. In their two SEC games, they lost to Kentucky scoring 17 points, and then they beat South Carolina scoring 27 points. So that is a big drop off between what they do against Group of Five teams and Wake Forest versus what they do, like you said, against SEC athletes. Now, LSU's defense.
Not good.
Wouldn't call it amazing.
No, but
they have SEC athletes on that defense. I would not say they have a good SEC defense.
No, but that's a Saturday night game in Death Valley. We know what that's supposed to mean. They both had the week off, right? No, LSU had the week off.
Yeah,
Ole Miss obviously was avoiding gunfire at South Carolina. I like LSU here. I do think this sets up for them to have a big day. Nussmeier, he's obviously not Daniels, but he's been okay this year. And I like LSU, mostly because I think Ole Miss is a little fraudulent.
Yeah, I fall in line with that, where especially Ole Miss is 3.5-point favorites. Like that to me is pretty crazy. I think this is going to come down to the wire, no matter what. I think it's going to be a shootout. And, like, was it last year that they played? Where it was like 63-56? And it was just whoever had the ball last was going to win? That's a similar vibe I get from this game. Probably a little bit less scoring, because LSU won't have the Heisman winner and two first-round wide receivers on the field.
Probably a little less scoring, yeah.
But I think that it's going to be another close one. And, yeah, I think there's a little bit of Death Valley at night sprinkled on top that makes me lean Tigers.
Yes. Home dog, your LSU, you got a shot to, after a week off, whatever you had in store for Ole Miss, whatever you might have been holding back the last couple weeks as you played South Alabama and UCLA, you can kind of spring all Ole Miss here. I like LSU on the spot. Mike, I see you. You want to talk some college football? We can get to you when we come back. Anyone else want to get in on anything they like? 713-780-3776. We will be back.
The Del Olalea Show continues
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's your host, Del Olalea.
Let's get the mic here. He wants to talk some college football. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Del. Hey, I had a couple questions. So, with all the upsets and, I guess, shockers throughout the first 6 weeks, would you say that going forward, fans need to be more, like, realistic on not having dominant teams out there anymore, whether it's due to NIL or whether it's due to transfer portal or whatever it is? Maybe it's a schedule, instead of throwing everyone from the West Coast over to the Big Ten. Is it possible that there's no longer going to be any dominance in any division or anything or any conference or anything like that? I don't know if this is based off of, you know, whether it's scheduling or whatever it is. It just seems like the rankings are all over the place, and some of the games going on this week, like you have Colorado against Kansas State. Whether you think Colorado is good or not, there's like a real shot that they could possibly beat them. That would be probably the biggest win in like the last 2 years for Colorado. So I don't know where that makes, you know, everyone stand as a fan, you know, whether they need to be okay with like being more weathered like an NFL fan where the records are kind of lackluster but still can, you know, win in the playoffs. I just wanted to see what you thought about that. Also, this is a side note, but what a waste of ESPN College Game Day not being at the Red River Rivalry. We're going to miss out on seeing stupid Pat McAfee possibly being able to wear a belt buckle the size of a dinner plate, maybe comically big, you know, cowboy hat or something stupid like that. Anyways, love the show. Thanks, Bill.
Appreciate it, Mike. Yeah, where are they? Oregon, Ohio State? Is that where they're
at? I assume they're at Oregon, Ohio State, which is a little weird, right?
Since it's why? Why would it be weird? Because it's not on their network?
Yeah.
They've done that in the past.
Yeah, but you have two other games that are on your network.
Are they going to be competing?
Also really good.
Well, they've done this before where Big Noon Kickoff is on at the same spot, right?
Yeah.
So that's going to happen again, I guess.
That part's not as weird, but it's just I just found it interesting.
Yeah,
Big Noon might not be there because it's an NBC game, I just realized. The
Yes, NBC Peacock. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I don't know where Big Noon Kickoff would be.
Fox might be. Not have a game this week?
They would have one. I'm just not sure.
A ranked game. Show's over.
I may not be a ranked game. Sean's figuring that out, as far as his first thing, while you were starting that, Mike, I thought to myself, yeah, maybe we need to start becoming getting more into our Sunday bag when it comes to watching college football. The 60-minute experience is not going to change. You're going to be miserable when your team's down, and you're going to be thrilled when they're up and satisfied when they win. But if they lose the game, coming to the realization that your season isn't over, particularly if you have national title aspirations and your playoff chances aren't over, needs to be like a tempering thing for people. Now, the Vanderbilt-Bama thing doesn't fit the profile because of the difference between the two programs.
Yeah.
Bama fans would never in their lifetime, because for the most part it didn't ever happen in their lifetime, believe that a Vanderbilt squad could beat them. Not after being ranked number one in the country going into the game. So some of that stuff is never going to go away. But as far as, we went into a tough environment and lost, it sucked, but we got to chill because it doesn't mean we can't make the playoff. Now, it may change our path. Maybe we go from a potential team who's getting a bye to a team who has to play on the first weekend, maybe a home game, maybe a road game. It makes our road more difficult, but the dream is still alive. Yeah, it's not a bad comp to think of them. Think of yourself more as an NFL fan.
Yeah.
But it's going to be hard during the game to kind of, you know what? There's another one next week.
Well, it's not just the Alabama-Vanderbilt scenario. It's like also the Texas-Oklahoma scenario or Texas-Texas A&M. Yeah, and like, there's still plenty of games.
The rivalries,
where, like,
yeah.
You just don't want to lose. Like, yes, your season's not over if you lose the game, but like, ask Ole Miss fans how they feel about like, hey, or I guess that's a bad example because they probably would be out with a loss to LSU, but it's like, that's what matters more. That's what actually people care about is Ohio State not being able to beat Michigan for three straight years.
Yeah, you know, people talk about making the playoff expanding and it hurting the importance of the regular season. I think the fact that maybe you don't have to be so reliant on going undefeated or losing just one game, I think strengthens the regular season because yeah. I think the games take on more of what they used to be, where it's Oklahoma, Texas. This isn't just simply about making the playoff. I effing hate Oklahoma. Let's win this game. And if all it is just beating Oklahoma for that day, cool. It doesn't. We could lose that game and still make the playoff, but all I care about today is I don't want to watch Crimson and Cream celebrate.
It's also going to be a situation where I think right now we are, like in September and October, we're in the mode of the regular season means less because of playoff expansion. But I think in November, when we're having more and more of these playoff eliminator games, because there used to only be like, I don't know, six teams that could make the 14 playoff
yeah.
every year. Like there's at most we're arguing about 4 versus 5. That was all we're ever arguing was 4 versus 5. And a lot of times we're even shrugging our shoulders because it's like, well, they're going to get smoked by Clemson or Alabama anyway. So What are we really talking about? So I think just the idea that there's going to be games that matter for being the 10 seed versus the 13 seed. And then, you know, if you're a 10 playing a 7, that's not a crazy mismatch in the way that some of the top end stuff was. And I do think, going to Mike's point, like I think the transfer portal plays a huge part in the fact there's no more juggernaut Alabama or Clemson or even Georgia to an extent teams where it's just, hey, you're five star, you're going to sit behind two more five stars for 2 years. And then you're going to get drafted your third year. And we're just going to keep that going forever. Now with NIL and with the transfer portal, like you don't have to sit if you don't want to. You can get paid to go be a starter somewhere else. Well, you don't have to be a backup at Alabama.
Well, maybe he saw it coming, but Isaiah Bond was a big contributor to Alabama.
Yeah.
And maybe he didn't want to sit behind Ryan Williams or share time with Ryan Williams, so he went to Texas.
I don't want to lose to Vanderbilt.
Or that, too.
I'm going to go to Texas.
Not that Texas was going to just sit on their hands and just get Isaiah Bond. They went and got Golden and who was the other guy?
Silas Bolden.
Bolden, Bond. And then, obviously, they brought in Wingo as well. So it's not like Texas was sitting on their hands. But he saw an opportunity. So normally, you would have Isaiah Bond on that Alabama team. Instead, he's with Texas. So, yeah, transfer portal certainly plays a part. And the only time I think the 12-team playoff will have a really giant effect on maybe the watching experience, at least for me, is championship weekend, particularly if it's a conference that has two teams that are certain to make the playoff no matter what. But there is the added benefit of making or at least winning your conference, and then you have a bye. So normally, like last year, Alabama-Georgia. We didn't expect Alabama to beat Georgia in the SEC title game, but they did, and it meant Georgia did make the playoff. This year, it's just going to mean, if that scenario takes place again, Georgia's likely to make the playoff, but they won't have the bye that Alabama will have. They'll have to play on that opening weekend. So that may take some of the hype away from a game like that. I kind of doubt it. It would be Alabama-Georgia, and they still are playing for something. But that's the give and take of it all, but I think that regular season means more.
Thank you. It's also Georgia and Alabama have already had the situation where they play in the SEC title game and then they play in the national championship game.
Yeah, one of them made it
twice.
The loser did it, made it anyway. So
they had that happen twice. So this isn't exactly a completely foreign concept.
Yeah, it's happened before.
Michigan, Ohio State. Ohio State's lost to Michigan and made the college football playoff.
It happens. It wouldn't be, if it happens this year, certainly it wouldn't be the first time. And obviously, with the extended playoff, won't be the last time. Okay, it's going to be a big weekend. We didn't even get to Ohio State, Oregon, other than trying to figure out where the game is.
It's not SEC, so who cares?
All right.
We talked about all the SEC teams, so I'm good.
Well, it is the number two versus number three playing each other.
Of the Big Ten? Yeah,
no.
It's going to be 16-13.
Of the country.
Oh.
Of the country. The one thought I have about that right now, and we're days away, we'll probably talk about it more on Friday, will we see all that Ohio State has to offer? Because they haven't had to show it. Now, they were only up 7-0 at the half last week against Iowa, and then they ran away with that one 35-7. Oregon has kind of been off the radar because they haven't played anyone has cared about watching them play. Their closest game was against Ashton Jeanty and on Boise State, and now that was before people were so focused on Jeanty possibly winning a Heisman. If that game happened last week, there would be a lot of eyes on it because you have a Heisman front runner against Oregon. Oregon was playing UCLA in Pasadena. And no one cares because that one wasn't competitive a couple weeks ago. And then they beat up on their last opponent. So Oregon hasn't played anyone. Anyone's been all that interested in watching. That'll change this week. And is it simply going to be the Jeremiah Smith show again? This will be Will Howard's first test. The one where this is the guy you brought in for these moments, and this is how he's playing. That will be the conversation going forward if Will Howard doesn't show up. He's played in substantial games at Kansas State, but nothing like this. Or did he win a Big 12 title? Did they beat TCU that year? Was he the quarterback for that K-State team who beat TCU?
I think so.
TCU lost that game and still went on to play for the national title. So he's played
a meaningless Big 12 title. The team who lost stole me the title.
It wasn't meaningless for Kansas State. So Will Howard has played in big games, but this is certainly the biggest test he'll face as an Ohio State Buckeye. So that's something to look forward to. Nice weekend, and you can go around the country and find other games. We'll get to more college football, as I said, later in the week. We will come back with some Astros news. It doesn't have any real impact on the season unless a torn ligament in your hand keeps you out for an entire year, which would be the case if it was an Astros pitcher, but this is an everyday player. So we probably shouldn't be too concerned, but we'll give you an update on that player, and we'll get to a potential signing for the Astros. At least there are some rumors about this player and the Astros being interested or should be interested in him, and we'll discuss that when we come back.
You're back inside the Veritex Community Bank Studios with Del Olalea. I mean, you're not actually in the studio, but if you watch ESPN Houston's YouTube channel, it's kind of like you are. No, not really. Okay.
The Astro player in question who's going to need surgery is Mauricio Dubon. He'll be out 6 to 8 weeks. That really means nothing to you. He'll be back in time when the Astros have to do baseball-like things. But he'll have surgery. He suffered the injury September 6th against the Diamondbacks. X-rays at the time revealed no damage, but much like anything when it comes to the Astros, after a further look, the imaging uncovered a ligament tear. He went on to play, we know. Played 18 games after the injury. His slash numbers are .291, .322, and .346. So Dubon will have surgery, and he should be okay. It is what it is. It's an off-season surgery for a everyday player. Thank goodness it's not a pitcher because we'd never see Dubon again.
It is funny how pitchers are like their own kind of athlete where if a football player, if a basketball player, and if a utility man in baseball, if they get off-season hand surgery, you're just kind of like, sure, sounds good. Glad. Speedy recovery, prayers up, whatever.
We'll see you when we see you.
Yeah, see you in March. And when a pitcher gets any sort of work done, if a pitcher just walks into a doctor's office, we're like, oh my God, now what? what? This guy's never going to pitch again. Everyone else can get off-season surgery, and we just kind of like shrug, and we're like, oh, at least he won't miss any games.
The only time we ever have an issue with it is if the guy holds off and he has it where he's going to miss spring training. Like, why'd you wait so long?
Yeah, yes, the training camp the spring training surgery. That's the only time. The Shaquille O'Neal, I got injured on company time. I'm going to recover on company time.
Had to be. I remember those times. I wasn't a Laker fan, but had to be infuriating.
Had to be the worst. And for Shaq, it's infuriating. Doesn't really matter. And especially would it matter if he got it 4 months before then when he could have.
Yeah.
It would have mattered if he just got it on June 20th instead of...
Once the season was over. Once you knew you were eliminated, why weren't you speeding to surgery? Why did you have to wait? Well, I had a vacation.
Yeah, come on.
It's the summer.
Not gonna let it ruin my summer.
Yeah.
Can't spend my summer on crutches because I think it was a toe injury too. Yeah. But a pitcher, man... Man, we'd probably do a whole segment on if Framber Valdez or
if Hunter Brown was having hand surgery,
we would definitely talk about it.
Yes.
And like
in a serious way, as opposed to just laughing it off because whatever, you just swing a bat, get out of here, do whatever you need to do, and get out of my face. We'll see you.
You say Kikuchi's getting offseason surgery, can't sign him.
Yes, that would be a story too, and maybe the Astros have no interest in signing him anyway. A guy who people say would be a good fit here. I don't know where the Astros care. It wouldn't fit unless we're talking about Jeff Bagwell giving an everyday first base, obviously a first baseman money. We know that didn't work out the last time, but is he at it again? I can't speak to the Astros' interest, but it's out there that Paul Goldschmidt would be a good fit. And you hear the name, you think Paul Goldschmidt's been a good player for a long time, was the National League MVP in 2022. But when I see a headline where Paul Goldschmidt commits to playing in 2025, that sounds like a guy who maybe was thinking very hard about retirement, or at least people were suggesting that he could retire. I don't want to hear that from a guy that the Astros are interested in, allegedly, or should be interested in, according to articles. I also don't like the fact that he was voted least valuable player by The Athletic. That guy, no matter what you think of The Athletic, if that's a headline anywhere, keep that guy off my team. The least valuable player in baseball. I don't want that guy on the team. I don't want that to be a free agent signing. The 2024 least valuable player in the National League.
Yes. If even one credible news organization has you as the least valuable player. If one writer on one
even
of these publications
has the least
valuable player in baseball, I do not want you on my team.
No, stay away. We've had enough first basemen not live up to contracts. They never old first basemen live up to contracts they shouldn't have gotten.
But he was a MVP 2 years ago. Yeah, heard that one before.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. We've already gone through this where they say, hey, he was great in 2020. Let's sign him. No, enough. Paul Goldschmidt, no. I'm not even sure it's a thing. I just want to stamp it out right now. I don't even want the embers of Paul Goldschmidt being an Astro.
I don't want to talk about it.
No, I don't want it to pick up steam. I don't want the flames to start.
Because I already know November, like this is, we're going to be talking about every Athletic article that has six different free agents on it. And the top five for all the top free agents and the Astros are part of it, and we had to kick it around of, well, you might lose Bregman, so maybe da-da-da. Maybe you need to add something with Goldschmidt or whoever I'm sure is also like a 36-year-old aging player that the Astros are allegedly interested in. And I can already tell, I don't want this.
I don't want to sign a 37-year-old baseball player.
He's from the area, I think, or he's from Texas at least. Paul Goldschmidt.
According to Wiki, he was born in Delaware, but maybe he grew up here and moved here at some point. I don't care. I don't care. I don't care if he was born on Crawford Street.
There's a lot of baseball players that were born in Texas. A lot of them stink too.
He grew up an Astros fan, but he is from Wilmington, Delaware.
Oh, okay.
I don't know his connection, why he grew up in Astros. Okay. He moved to Dallas and then to Houston. So there it is.
Oh yeah. Grew up in the Woodlands.
Because his family owned a flooring company.
He went to the Woodlands High School.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
I don't care if he sold programs in front of Enron. Keep him out of here.
State?
Not whatever.
He's not a native Texan, but he got here as soon as he could.
Ah, yes.
I bet he has that somewhere on his truck.
Even more reason not to sign him.
And people in St. Louis are like, "You're not in Texas. Yeah. What are you talking about?"
Hey, knock it off. Cut that out. You're in Missouri now. We'd appreciate you acknowledging it. Been a great player for a long time, and that's the point. He was a great player for a long time and no longer. Let's not make that decision again. It's not even that they will make it. It's simply the suggestion that they could, and it scares me a little because it would would suggest that they haven't learned their lesson. Just avoid Paul Goldschmidt. We can do better than a 37-year-old first baseman. Okay. All right. We got one more segment here to go on the show. If you want to get in, you can. 713-780-3776. There is a potential move for a current Astro to first base. I'll give you that name, according to Chandler Rome, when we get back. So maybe the Paul Goldschmidt stuff we don't have to worry about if Chandler Rome is correct. We'll talk about that, too, before we wrap it up when we come back.
You're back inside the Veritex Community Bank Studios with Del Olalea. I mean, you're not actually in the studio, but if you watch ESPN Houston's YouTube channel, it's kind of like you are. No, not really.
Final segment of the show. And while some muckrakers are trying to torture us with the thought of Paul Goldschmidt being here, Chandler Rome, reliable, covers the team on a daily basis, suggests that Zach DiCenzo could move over to first base. That could be a move in play. He could become your everyday first baseman. So what would it be if Bregman doesn't come back? The infield would be Whitcomb, Pena, Altuve, and DiCenzo.
And then maybe Bryce Matthews at some point.
And Dubon would get some reps. He's your utility every man who can do a lot of different things.
Yeah, you really sold that as if it was going to be, you know.
Who else could it have been?
I don't know. Yainer Diaz? I don't know.
No.
When you go, there's better news than Paul Goldschmidt.
Well,
Zach DiCenzo might move to first base.
I'm in the mode of anything is better than Paul Goldschmidt.
Yeah, I mean, if Pangum, whatever,
if they give
Paul Goldschmidt's going to command.
If they give him an Abreu-type contract.
Yeah. Well, let me pull up some Goldschmidt numbers. Yeah, he's not – I mean, he's better than DiCenzo.
Yes, he is better than – but. For what it might cost.
Yeah, he's not like $15 million more valuable.
You would hope it's only 15 more as far as what they would pay him. DiCenzo's not making a lot of money. You think Goldschmidt's coming here for what, 17 a year?
Yeah, people called him the least valuable player in baseball.
You think he's going to allow that to determine what type of contract he wants? And I don't think he would get a multi-year deal. I would hope the Astros wouldn't do that if they were interested in him. I think it would be on a year-to-year basis if he still wants to play, which he has said he wants to. I don't want to deal with it, honestly. I don't want to hear about Bagwell-lytics again.
37?
Yeah, well, he's 37 years old. I understand hopping on a chance to get a veteran to bolster your roster. But this isn't just, hey, he's a bat we're going to use occasionally. If you sign Goldschmidt, he's playing as long as he's healthy every day.
Yeah. And you're also – you still have the Abreu money on your books?
Well, yes.
I honestly think that's the biggest, I guess, hurdle for the Astros, or the biggest reason why the Astros aren't going to be spending – or I don't expect the Astros to be spending top-level money. It's just because they're paying someone seven. They already made their acquisition, and it went so poorly that they cut them. Like, that money is already being spent.
Yes.
Like, they can't.
It's true.
You then have to ask, is Paul Goldschmidt worth, what, 19 plus, let's just say,
are you willing to
16?
So at this
just to make it easy.
Are you willing to, let's say Paul Goldschmidt gets 18. Are you willing to put $35 million into first base?
No. Not for Paul Goldschmidt. Not for the first baseman to be Paul Goldschmidt at the end of that.
No.
At the end of all that, at the end of the equation. Yeah, $35 million to first base? Yeah. Am I getting Albert Pujols? Nope. Nope, you're not.
No, you're getting the last vestige of Paul Goldschmidt's career. That's what you're getting.
Yeah, you're getting
plus
maybe,
you're paying Abreu.
You're getting Angels Albert Pujols.
Ugh, no,
maybe
one.
Actually, Pujols had a couple good years for the Angels.
You're getting the version of Albert Pujols who went to be a Cardinal, or is it a Dodger? Did he become a Dodger at the very end? Where did he go?
He retired as a Cardinal, but I think he was a Dodger for.
You're getting
a second,
that version
maybe?
Of Albert Pujols. Yeah, he played for the Dodgers for a little bit.
Yeah,
we don't want that version.
No thanks.
So, if you're going young at the corners, where is this money going? In the example where Whitcomb's playing third and DeCenzo's playing first, where's the money going? Who are you signing?
Abreu and Montero.
No,
Ryan Pratt.
To improve the team, where's the money going to improve the team? Then?
Josh Hader.
He's already on the roster.
That's what I'm saying. Because I don't know.
I know what you're saying. I just don't like what you're saying.
Kikuchi.
What about everyday players? Because that's the problem for the
Caratini back?
The roster, the everyday lineup, it doesn't look that great on paper if Bregman's not here.
And if one guy misses time, one of the guys that will remain, if one of Alvarez, Tucker, Altuve, and Diaz, if one of them is out, then it's all of a sudden like, oh my God.
You say you're thankful for Hunter Brown, you're thankful for Fromber, and you hope that Christian Javier comes back. And whoever knows, whatever happens for Luis Garcia, I'm not even mentioning the other guy. Let's not pretend like that's a real thing until it actually is a thing.
Eric Genty?
No, he's healthy. I'm talking about the guys who don't pitch for the Astros anymore, despite their contract suggesting they really should pitch for them. No, even him. I would expect to come back at some point. There's one, we all know who it is, that we don't mention by name. I won't put him in the Voldemort position, but there really is no point in mentioning his name. You can guess. I don't know. If it's first and third young guys who will need to prove that they can play at a high level for this team to get where they want to go, I don't feel great. That's why the Bregman thing seems so important. I'll take one of Whitcomb and DeCenzo playing a lot of games, not both.
Yes, I'd be more okay with DeCenzo every day first baseman
if
Zach
Bregman's
DeCenzo
back.
If Bregman's playing third base.
Yeah.
If
your corner infielders are Whitcomb and DeCenzo, and Todd Callis has to go, Whitcomb makes a great play and DeCenzo makes a pick at first. I am not encouraged. I am not encouraged. I'm not telling a man how to spend his money, because who am I to do that? But signing Bregman would be great. Bringing him back would be awesome.
Yeah.
You're the best player in Astros history is practically begging you to do it, being very vocal about it as the season was coming to an end. Are we looking to disappoint Jose Altuve?
But what does the other greatest Astro in
the previous greatest Astro?
Yeah. What does he think? The one with a lot less team hardware.
Postseason success?
Yeah.
What do the two former best Astros think? Because they're both in there. What do Biggio and Bagwell think about the prospects? You would think as baseball guys, they would say, hey, give them all the money. We know Bagwell's not shy about giving money to guys.
Yeah. He loves giving money to guys that are 30 plus.
Yeah. Why not?
If anything, Bregman's too young.
If anything, you think Bagwell would be on his side.
Yeah, he's like, I don't know. Can we give Scott Rolen some money?
The analytics would say, which they have followed less and less, the analytics would say, don't give Bregman the deal and his money. The baseball guy should be like, yeah, give the 30-year-old whatever he wants for the most part. We'll see who wins that. This is a time where I want Jim Crane, if Bagwell is saying yes to Bregman, to listen to Bagwell. It's very rare I'm going to say that, but this time, listen to Bagwell, if that's what he's saying.
I want a Bagwell move, not a click move.
Yeah, in this instance.
Rarely.
Hey, Dana Brown, hush up. Mute up. Listen to Jeff on this one.
I kind of think that's just what Dana Brown does.
I'll see. We were just making jokes here. Now I got to bring back reality.
I don't know how often they're going. You know, we're kind of split on this. Dana, what do you think? How should I spend $30 million a year?
If they have a strong opinion on something, I am not under the impression that they go to Dana for the tiebreaker.
That's just me.
I do think they lean on him for things they don't have strong opinions on.
Hey, find us another Eric Getty, please.
Yeah.
That's boring. We don't want to do that.
We need a fourth We need a guy who would be fourth in rotation. Go find someone. He got Kikuchi. Applauds. Applause. Plaudits for Dana Brown. But when they feel like they want to be involved, I don't know that he's a big part of the equation. All right. We are done for the day on this show. Sean will be here with you for Gallant and George. And then the Killer Bees will follow them. Since we are done, what does that mean?
We did it!
We're going to say Shred 'em Shroud for tomorrow. We didn't do any Shroud stuff, so we didn't have to play it. But we'll get to that at some point. That's going to be part of the rotation. Trust me. I'll talk to you tomorrow.